Funding for Smart Talk is provided by Capital Blue Cross. For 80 years, Capital Blue Cross has offered products that provide peace of mind and promote good health, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Health and Wellness Centers that provide in-person service and inspire healthy living. Capital Blue Cross is behind you for whatever lies ahead. More information is at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross. Live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, committed to research that improves health, reduces recovery times, and brings new treatments and therapies to our area before they're available elsewhere. More information is at upmcpinnacle.com.
Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, and welcome to the first edition of Smart Talk for 2018. The pace of significant news stories and issues in 2017 was unlike anything we've seen in recent years. And by pace, I mean there were major news stories seemingly every day. It was often driven by President Donald Trump and how his administration changed the nation's policies and direction. The president's personality, how he used Twitter, and his non-traditional approach to governing all contributed. 2018 could be just as noteworthy. Here in Pennsylvania, there's an election for governor, a U.S. Senate seat, all of the congressional delegation, and the entire state house and half the Senate. Congressional redistricting will continue to be a big issue, along with sexual misconduct, health care, energy, and how the state spends and taxes. On today's program, we want to hear what issues are most important to you and what you would like to hear reported and explored more in 2018. Phones are open. We have other forms of email and social media to contact us as well. Call 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You also can leave one of your suggestions or a couple of your suggestions on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number is 1-800-729-7532. This is something, a program that is kind of unique. We'd like to hear from you the issues that you would like to hear covered, the ones that are most important to you. WITF's Multimedia News Director, Tim Lambert, joins me. Tim, Happy New Year to you, and
to you.
Welcome to the program.
Great to be back, as always, Scott.
We've produced programs like this over the years, but it seems to have an additional importance in today's atmosphere. When the president and his supporters attack the media often, and only half the country, now this is according to a poll last month, trust journalists in what they hear, read, and see. As I said, we've often solicited ideas, but it seems more significant now.
Yeah, I think so. I think the big thing for us is heading into 2018 is becoming more transparent as a news organization, talking a little bit more about our process, whether that's from the editorial side, whether it's from our reporters telling stories of you know, the stories behind the stories and how they went about reporting a story, and just making sure that we are as clear with our listeners, with you, as we can be when it comes to how we go about doing our job each and every day. I think journalism has become this this field that's a little bit misunderstood. I don't think people quite understand what we go through each and every day, so we want to try to make that a little easier for people to kind of see how we do things. We've already, in the last month or so, we've posted our editorial guidelines on our website through the Trusting News Project, and we've also posted the firewall between editorial and when it comes to funders and fundraising on WITF.
What are some of the issues that we'll make some distinctions here between news and Smart Talk, but in news, what are some of the issues that you see as being big in 2018?
Well, I think the gerrymandering issue is top of mind right now. We had a ruling on the case late last week on the state level on the lawsuit that was brought against the district map, the congressional district map in Pennsylvania that was drawn in 2012. But also, there is a federal ruling that will be coming up as well, and also the elections. I mean, I think 2018, you have the midterm elections in Congress. You have a U.S. Senate race here in Pennsylvania as Bob Casey, the Democrat, is running for reelection. You have a governor's race where you have Governor Tom Wolf and a field of at least four Republicans right now, two of whom are state lawmakers. So, you know, that also leads to how the budget's going to play out in another 6 months. We're going to already start talking about the budget, I guess. But I think the elections in Pennsylvania are going to put the state sort of in the center of the political conversation in the country.
Let's get back to the redistricting issue, because as you mentioned, there was a ruling from Commonwealth Court last week that basically the ruling came down to is that the plaintiffs did not prove their case that politics or gerrymandering played a large part in how Pennsylvania's congressional districts were drawn. Now, this is just the first step, right?
Yeah. This will be definitely appealed, and the ruling will go to the state Supreme Court to take the plaintiffs will take their case to the Supreme Court here in Pennsylvania.
And there are also, as has been reported, and our Keystone Crossroads Project has covered this pretty extensively, and we've had guests on this program talking about it as well, is there's a case in Washington, the U.S. Supreme Court, that coming from Wisconsin, that could have a great impact on how congressional boundaries are drawn, too.
Yeah, and we're not sure when that ruling is going to come on the federal level, but that will have national implications when that ruling does come from the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so gerrymandering or congressional redistricting is going to be a huge issue. What about the elections this year? As you mentioned, it's always significant when we are electing or reelecting a governor here in Pennsylvania. Tom Wolf, his first year, as is the case with many other governors, was not very popular his first year. But as we have gone into his fourth year now, the polls show that he is a little more popular, and now that there have been some Republican candidates identified, yes, there will be at least four Republicans will be running for the nomination to oppose Governor Wolf in the fall. So things are a little bit different than they were even 2 or 3 years ago. But one of the issues that will come up often, I'm sure, has to do with the budget.
Yeah, and I think throughout the governor's his term here, his first term, we've seen the conflict between a Democratic governor and a Republican-controlled legislature, whose numbers have grown over the last few elections. So the Republicans have grown stronger and stronger in the state legislature over the last few elections, and they've held firm on the budget in Pennsylvania to make sure that spending is cut down, as where the governor has, at least in his first year, was looking for big tax increases in the state. To try to make up for some of the funding cuts over the years from the Corbett administration. So, you know, we have this dynamic in place right now where things have sort of settled down a little bit. There wasn't really a debate over the budget size this year, but it was how to fund that budget. That's what sort of extended things a few more months. But the budget's been, you know, maybe not technically late, but in terms of finishing the budget, it's been late every year that Governor Wolf's been in office.
What I found unique in this year's budget-making process was how optimistic both sides, both the Wolf administration and Republicans, at least in the Senate, seemed to be that there would be a quick conclusion to finishing this budget, that it would work out, and you know, everyone would be kind of mostly in agreement. Didn't work out that way, though, once the state house, a Republican-dominated state house, got involved, and it went 3 months longer. So, you know, that's an issue to take a look at as well. Something else that will be very interesting this year, Tim, is the Trump effect on the congressional elections, and even down on the state house and Senate level as well. If you look at the polls, President Trump is the least popular president at this point in his administration, or any other, since these polls have been taken, any other president. And, you know, the question always arises, does that have an impact for the first election, congressional election afterward? Now, traditionally, even with a popular president, the congressional delegations have changed. There have been a lot of change in Congress for the party, you know, good for the party that is not in office. So that will be even especially interesting this year.
Yeah, and I think what's going to be really interesting is you're already talking, you're hearing a lot about how Democrats may take back the House. And I think Pennsylvania, again, is going to be at the center of that, because we've had some lawmakers decide to step down. Mid-State Congressman Charlie Dent is not seeking another term. We've seen a congressman in western Pennsylvania who had to resign amidst a scandal. So you have some changing dynamics within the congressional races in Pennsylvania. Will they be more competitive than they have been over the years? Time will tell. But I think that the Pennsylvania congressional district or congressional makeup is something to keep an eye on as well going into 2018, because it could change significantly.
We have open
lines. And,
of
course, you have Senator Bob Casey.
That's right.
Running for re-election, which, again, is going to be sort of like that's a statewide election. So we'll see if the Trump effect plays any role in that, of course, with Mid-State Congressman Lou Barletta running for the GOP nomination, a big supporter of President Trump. So we'll see if that Trump effect that you called it takes effect.
And that one could be significant nationally as well, because Senator Bob Casey has been especially outspoken and critical of the Trump administration, the president, while Lou Barletta has been one of the president's biggest supporters. Folks, we have open lines right now. We'd like to hear your ideas. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. We've gotten a few emails, Tim. Melissa, who is actually from Washington, D.C., but she says she travels through the state a lot and loves the show.
Thanks,
Good
Melissa.
Good to hear that. She said she'd like to hear the media pay more attention to the environment, climate change, pollution, and mining concerns. We here at WITF and across the state, of course, we have our State Impact Pennsylvania, where we focus on Pennsylvania's energy economy, and the environment is a big part of that discussion. But this is an issue that we know the WITF audience in particular is interested in.
Yeah, I think we've seen that across public media, listeners, surveys, and that the environment is important. State Impact Pennsylvania will be in full force in 2018. If you have not heard, we are expanding the project to include two reporters now based in Pittsburgh out of WESA and the Allegheny Front. We have an editor who is now a full-time editor on the project. His name's Scott Blanchard. Scott comes to us from the York Daily Record, and he's been with us about a month and a half and getting things really up and running. So there will be more stories from State Impact Pennsylvania looking at issues like pipelines, looking at issues like how the coal industry is changing in Pennsylvania, looking at nuclear power and what the future of nuclear power is in Pennsylvania. There are six nuclear power plants in the state. We know that Three Mile Island is slated to close in the coming years. So we'll see if that changes. But so that's an issue that we will definitely be taking a look at.
We have a couple other suggestions here. Thomas says, I'd like to hear a show that had a legitimate socialist and a show with a legitimate libertarian to discuss their views. Also, it might be interesting to have shows with people that have out-of-the-ordinary jobs. And he gives an example of a roller coaster mechanic. So those are two different kind of programs. But, you know, since Senator Bernie Sanders ran for president in 2016, I almost said last year, in 2016, there has been a lot of questions about what is a socialist and what's a democratic socialist. What do you think about that, Tom?
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the things that we have tried to do over the years and maybe haven't been as successful as we want it to be is to increase the diversity of voices, the diversity of viewpoints that you hear each and every day on WITF. So I love that idea. I think that's a good thing to have people from different viewpoints come on and talk about you know, why they believe certain things and what they stand for. And sort of we've seen this blurring of the lines a little bit, I think, with the you know, where you have conservatives sort of watching the Trump administration sort of at arm's length in some cases, some conservatives. And, you know, so how do they see the future of the Republican Party play out? You know, are socialists starting to gain a little bit more when it comes to the political debate in America? How do liberals feel like? Are liberals going far left now? Are they still sort of left of center? Where do things stand there? So the more viewpoints and differing opinions that we hear, I think the better.
Often when people hear the word diversity, they think of racial diversity or religious diversity, and we're committed to those things as well. But more and more people, when they hear diversity today, are having to think about, okay, different viewpoints, not just the color of your skin, your religious background, but, okay, what are your beliefs?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that we definitely want to concentrate on as the new year gets underway.
Got another email here from Todd. Says he's concerned about the loss of over-the-air TV stations. I think he's alluding to a larger conversation about media consolidation. Recently lost two over-the-air television stations when Channel 15 and 49 moved their broadcast to towers in the Harrisburg area. And to say the least, I'm seriously miffed, in part because I never saw this coming, even though the FCC has been planning spectrum reallocation for years. Please do a show on the future of over-the-air television in South Central Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think that is something that that has come up from time to time. We've had some calls over the last few months about Sinclair expanding, which is a conservative company that owns stations, television stations across the country. I also think that plays into radio stations as well, and I think broadcast in general. We've seen consolidations occur. We've seen stations where, you know, Scott, both you and I worked in different stations in Pennsylvania on small stations that no longer operate anymore.
So commercial stations.
Yeah, commercial stations. Yeah. That we've seen a loss of these community stations, these community voices, and they've just gone away. I worked in Lewistown. I worked in Gettysburg. Both the stations that I worked at no longer have sort of a local presence. In fact, the one in Lewistown's off the air now. So we've seen these smaller stations sort of disappear from our communities, and there's nobody sort of there to fill the gap.
Well, and one of... Well, this is one of the most disturbing parts for me, somebody who's been in the business for so long, is that many of the stations have gone off the air. There's been consolidation. But one of the areas that a lot of local stations, in fact, most stations, have cut back on is news.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I've said it before, we're the largest news organization as far as the radio goes in central Pennsylvania. That's not bragging. That's just, I think, a battle of attrition. We've been fortunate where we've been able to maintain our staff and grow it a little bit over the last few years while other stations have cut back. I was on a panel last month in late November, in fact, with the York Daily Record. And the morning host from the WSBA in York. And, you know, he said, at one point in the New York studios, in their staff for WSBA, they had 20 reporters, and he said now they're down to like two. That's a significant loss in a community of journalists who are out there trying to speak truth to power. Mm.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing health care coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, bringing quality care to your community through Harrisburg, Community Osteopathic, West Shore, Carlisle, Hanover, Lancaster, Lititz, and Memorial Hospitals. More information is available at upmcpinnacle.com.
On this first Smart Talk of 2018, we're looking ahead to the issues and news stories that the WITF will be looking at and covering throughout the year. We'll be featuring on Smart Talk. But we'd like to hear from you, the issues that you find most important, maybe an issue that you think hasn't gotten as much attention. 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call, or you can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On WITF's Facebook page, you can leave your suggestions or suggestion as well. Also on Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Our guest is, I don't know if I call him a guest because, but anyway, he's a guest on Smart Talk today, is WITF's Multimedia News Director, Tim Lambert. Let's take some phone calls. Theodora is in Columbia. Theodora, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for having a program like this. I appreciate it. I have three categories, and you can stop me at any time. I'll try to be brief.
Okay.
One of them is the funding of NPR and then WITF. The question has to do with how does the station, how does NPR, maybe it's different, accept money from places like Breitbart News or Steve Bannon or the Koch brothers or people on the other sides of the political spectrum? What does ITF accept? And on what principles? The second topic has to do with the funding of public schools, which is now a hot issue because the representative has proposed once again eliminating property taxes for school funding. And the third one is my suggestion about more about the arts on WITF, and not just Pennsylvania arts, but something broader, the way Smart Talk was when it first began, sort of on the model of Terry Gross's programming. So I'll quit and listen.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Three very good topics. The ITF funding question. How do you address that?
Well, it's coincidentally, as part of our Trusting News project, we have posted our policies on transparency in fundraising, and you can go to WITF.org, just click on the Trusting News button there on the front page of the homepage, and that'll lay out how things work when it comes to fundraising and WITF. And yes, I can't speak to NPR and funding for the Koch brothers. I know Koch Industries has supported both NPR and Marketplace, which we air, but you know they have their own policies for that. But for us, like I said, there's a firewall. For State Impact Pennsylvania, we have received funding over the years from the Heinz Endowment and from the William Penn Foundation. And whenever those entities come up in news stories, we cover them as fairly as we can, but we also disclose that that's where the funding comes from. There is a very strong firewall, as I said, between our fundraising arm and who we get money from and how the editorial side of WITF works. Another good example would be Transforming Health, which is funded by Penn State Health. And just a couple of weeks ago, Penn State Health announced a partnership with UPMC, and we've had to cover that. And it wasn't, and again, we disclosed that, you know, Penn State Health fund some of Transforming Health as well. But that's a way to be as transparent as we can. And it's up to the listeners to say, hey, you know what? I don't see the balance that I need in this story. It seems like you're favoring one or the other. That's not something we try to do. Again, we try it. We're very careful in doing our jobs, regardless of where the money comes from. And we disclose when those financial relationships are part of a story we're covering. So I think that's the best way I can address that.
Well, and that firewall is very important.
And again, if you go to the website and that story that we posted on the policies, I think that'll help clear up any questions as well.
Well, I say that firewall is so important because if it's kind of hard to explain for someone who has never worked in the newsroom. But journalists take that line, that firewall, very seriously. I mean, even if a salesperson walks into the newsroom, sometimes like, oh, boy, okay. You know, sometimes we don't really want to hear that, okay, this person is a sponsor or, you know, provides funding for the station because, you know, it doesn't have an influence on us, but we have no need to know.
Right. And I would say that the salespeople at WITF do not contact reporters. They go through me or they go through my boss, Kara Williams Fry, and then we discuss whether there's actual content to cover from a story like that. So, yeah, I think that's an issue that, again, it's news organizations need to be more transparent about where their funding's coming from. But again, WITF isn't any different from a commercial station that gets money from a company as well.
Theodora also mentioned school funding. This has been a huge issue in Pennsylvania for years, and as she mentioned, there's been another proposal to eliminate property taxes. This has been ongoing for some time now, but something may have to be done with property taxes soon. Just, you know, a judicial ruling just recently on it.
Yeah, and I think the best way that I could say that is going to be an issue that we're going to be watching through our Keystone Crossroads partners at WHYY in Philadelphia. There's a very good education reporter, one of the best education reporters in the state, by the name of Kevin McCory. Kevin has been following this issue very closely and will continue to do so throughout the year.
And she mentioned the arts, and I agree with her. We will cover more topics related to the arts on Smart Talk. In fact, Stuart Molina, Harrisburg Symphony Orchestra, will be on the program. He's scheduled to be on the program in January. I don't have the exact date right in front of me, but Mr. Molina will be on the program talking about just this topic about the arts here in central Pennsylvania. And she mentioned talking about it on a national basis, and I agree. Let's go to the phone. Neil is in Carlisle. Neil, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I'm a long-time listener. I actually grew up in Hershey where the TV station started, and I've been listening ever since the 70s.
Well, we're glad to hear that.
First-time caller, though.
Oh, okay.
It just seems like the stakes are higher than they've ever been before.
I agree.
What I would like to hear discussed on Smart Talk is the concept of false equivalency in journalism. It just seems like there's a lot of people that don't understand that concept, And I'm hoping that you'll kind of give a definition of that to the people that maybe are listening that don't understand.
Neil, if you would.
That relates very strongly to the fact that Trump is our president. There's so many people who don't understand that concept. And here, you know, with all good intentions, I think the national media pretty much created Trump. They created his success. They put him there. And it's just so ironic that this is happening while he is making his mark by slamming the legitimate media.
Well, Neil, can I go back to your first point about false equivalency? Give me an example, if you would.
Sure. Now, I would just come right out and admit that I am a very liberal person, progressive, so my example was going to reflect that. You can take a lot of these nut job right-wing conservative pundits, and, you know, they end up getting, let's say the topic is climate change. They end up getting credibility or some kind of pseudo-credibility, through the press because they are treated like as if they actually know something as opposed to, you know, it's like they're on the same level as the scientists who are trying to help mankind, you know. And then here these jokers come along. They have their own agenda. They don't know squat about the subject, but yet they get just as much airtime in many cases as the people who actually know what they're talking about. Mm.
Hey, Neil, thank you very much for your calls and your suggestions. I figured that's where he would go with that because that's an issue that there has been a lot of criticism over the years of the national media in particular about giving equal treatment to that issue in particular when 97% of National Academy of Science says that the climate change is happening, but yet many programs you will hear climate change deniers given 50-50. So what about that, Tim?
Yeah, I think the false equivalency is something, again, that is sort of, as Neil rightly correctly pointed out, it's gained prominence in criticism of how journalists do their job because there has been, you know, questions as to whether an interview is done with somebody and then you leave out a viewpoint or you include a viewpoint and give that equal weight, like Neil pointed out. And I think that's something, again, through the Trusting News Project that we're a part of, that, in our stories, we will point out, hey, did we leave something out? Did we include a voice that maybe didn't belong there? You know, so it's going to be up to listeners and readers, hopefully, to hold us in check and say, hey, wait a minute, you left something out that could have added a good viewpoint to that story. So you have to sort of balance, the level of expertise, I think, of the source and what that source is going to add to a story, not just counterpoint something, but to actually back up their case for or against an issue.
Yeah, I remember my very, very early in my career, I had a general manager said a good news person, good journalist creates a fight. And I've learned over the years that's not true.
No.
That's not
terrible
true.
Terrible advice.
It really was.
That's not our job.
It really was because it was, okay, you know, we can sensationalize. We can start an argument if we want. We could do that on almost every story if we wanted to. But that's not doing our jobs.
Right.
Our job is informing people.
That's right. Our job is to inform people and to create a conversation around an issue, whether it's a policy issue, whether it's a community issue. So that's how we'll move forward.
Let's take a phone call from Rich in Harrisburg. Rich, you're on the air.
Hi,
Rich.
Scott. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
Hey, Rich.
Listen to your call a lot when I can get it. I drive truck, and I can usually hold till I get on the other side of Lancaster, then I get to Philly and I lose you. I'd like to see you do a subject or a conversation on the double standard justice system, not only in the state, but the country. Now, if you need examples, I can cite you examples, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of losing you now, so it's kind of ironic. Hey, thank you very much for your call, but we get the gist of what he was talking about. This has been an accusation for a long, long time. is that people who are well-known, people who may be elected to high positions, people who have money, are treated differently than people who don't have money, maybe people who are poor, maybe people who are African-American, treated differently in the justice system.
Yeah, I think that's a very good topic, and I think that it's something that NPR has looked at on a national level, maybe not at the level of detail that that you had hoped for. And that's something that we want to get into a little bit as well at WYTF. It comes down to resources sometimes, because when it comes to a topic like this, it takes a lot of digging and a lot of work. But that is an excellent idea to take a look at. The Carlisle Sentinel has been doing a really good job at looking at those types of issues.
We have a few emails here with suggestions of healthcare costs. I think it would help people be better consumers of healthcare to have a segment comparing the cost of tests at different healthcare providing facilities. An example would be an MRI of your knee, an X-ray of your arm. I think it would help then to explain if you have a $1,000 deductible, you'd have to pay for it out of your pocket. Program, this is another suggestion, dedicated to the history of women in voting. I think the younger generation is very disconnected from the generations of women that were unable to vote. Let's start with health care cost. I have to say, Tim, this is one of my favorite topics because we've been told over and over the changes in healthcare that you need to shop around, but it's very difficult to do. Brett Schultes, our transforming health reporter now, has been working on a lot of stories on this area, but it still is difficult to do.
Yeah, and it's been changing again. You know, over the life of the Affordable Care Act, you've seen costs skyrocket in some cases, in other cases they haven't. And I think Transforming Health has touched on this issue a few times in the
past.
Yeah. There's a lot to dig into when it comes to that. So that's an excellent suggestion.
Well, yeah, I think what this listener is suggesting, that we even have a side by side comparison, maybe as part of a news story or as you know, part of a Smart Talk. But I don't know. One of the better reporting jobs I've seen on this issue was Time Magazine a few years ago. Did a very substantial piece on why healthcare costs deviate the way they do. I mean, as mentioned here by the listener, you can find MRI that cost $1,000 here, maybe $2,000 there, maybe a few hundred dollars this other place. That piece seemed to point at Medicare as the reason that providers get a certain amount of money from the federal government. And most of the patients that the doctors do see are older patients that pay with Medicare, and they make up the difference in non-Medicare, those who are insured or maybe even those who aren't insured. So that is something to look at. History of women in voting. That's an interesting topic. I think another issue along those lines is why Pennsylvania has so few women in its legislature and in other elected positions across the state.
Yeah, that's an issue we've again touched on in the past and maybe haven't delved into as much as we should have. But yeah, I think we've seen it in Alabama where women voters turned a Senate race, black women voters in particular. We saw that in the presidential election where women voted, the soccer moms in suburban Philadelphia went for President Donald Trump. So women voters have had a larger and larger voice in Pennsylvania and nationally. So I think that is something that heading into the 2018 election, we'll take a look at not only female candidates who are running for Congress in Pennsylvania, but also taking a look at the potential power of those women voters.
We're going to take more of your phone calls and emails and suggestions coming up. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the topics and the issues that are most important to you that you would like to see us delve into in 2018. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave your suggestions on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. And Tim Lambert, WITF's Multimedia News Director, is with us. And here's another suggestion from Linda in Hummelstown. Says, the big thing in this election is when candidates describe themselves, they need to disclose their past voting records and they need to be publicized. I assume she's talking about those voting records.
Yeah, and again, there are more and more tools available to track that, how lawmakers vote, not only how they voted, but how many votes they were present for. So I think that is something, that, again, that we're going to be keeping an eye on, especially as we head into the 2018 elections.
Let's talk to Jim and Enola. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Hi, Jim. Tim. Happy New Year to both of you.
Same to you, sir.
I have two suggestions that are kind of related to each other. I think that you guys ought to do more. You're already doing some to promote civility between groups that are conservative and people who are conservative and progressive. I'd like to see a program where you invite people who are thoughtful people, a conservative and a progressive, to talk about things that they can agree on, how they can get the common ground on some of the pressing issues that are before us. And a similar idea is try to reduce dysfunction in our legislature. I would like to see you have a conservative and a progressive legislator on to talk about the same thing, issues that they can agree on and how they can work together to find common ground on some of the important issues in Pennsylvania. Those are my ideas. Thank you.
Hey, Jim, thank you very much for your call. I mean, that's one of our goals, is to promote civil conversation, bring some context. It's not always easy, especially in this atmosphere, but I hope that we're successful most of the time with that, and we'll try to be all the time where we promote that. But I like the idea, though, of what Jim said, as far as people coming from different points of view and finding some common ground, because that is so difficult today, Tim.
And I'm not sure. I mean, I think it is, but it isn't. I think when people talk one-on-one about issues, I think that there is some civility there. I think there is a nice discourse of ideas between the two. And I think when you bring in the social media and you bring in all the different bubble media, partisan media, then you start getting a little bit venomous, I think, when it comes to some of these issues. But absolutely, Jim. In fact, Scott and I talked late in the year last year about doing more of that, of getting conservative and liberal voices, progressive voices, voices outside the mainstream on a little bit more to talk about issues and what their views of those issues are, and to do it in a civil way. I think that's what we always try to do here on Smart Talk, but I think it's important to hear more diverse viewpoints of the challenges facing our region and our state.
When I say it's difficult, I guess there are a few issues I have in mind that provide a real challenge for getting people to admit there are some common interests, put it that way, something they can agree on. Abortion, for one. Guns, another. Often the environment and some of those things, that it's sometimes very difficult to get people to sit down together. I mean, I've had shows that I've produced in the past where guests would say, well, if he or she's going to be on, I won't be on. That's not a good way to start a program, saying that, okay, can we find some areas where you can agree on?
Right. And we've also had those cases where we've had candidates from the same party on talking about it, and they turn nasty. So it's just, I think, a reflection of where we are right now. But definitely worth doing in the future, because those viewpoints are so important for people to hear and be exposed to.
Let's go to Gwen in Fairfield. Gwen, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my
call.
Gwen. I just want to say, keep up the good work. I've called in three times on three very different topics. One of bears, another one of organ donations, and the first one was about real estate tax assessment in Pennsylvania, South Central Pennsylvania. So, I have to say that one of the most profound shows I've listened to was the interview with Wendy Perlman and the review of her book, We Crossed a Bridge and It Trembled.
It had to do with Syrian refugees, deeply.
And I so much appreciate all the topics that you bring up. I would like to ask the conservative and liberal point of views, you can bring that to the domestic situation. I married a man 3 years ago who at the time, I didn't think his political ideas were going to be so challenging until this past year. So,
well, it sounds like it's created a little bit of tension.
We can't talk about politics very well.
So I guess you won't come on the show, the both of you, then.
Yeah. Hey, you know, that's an interesting idea. Hey, thank you very much. Because that is a very interesting topic, because the past year where voices have been louder, just husband and wives, relatives, I got into a discussion over the holidays with a family member. I swore I would not do it, and I said, listen, I do this every day. I prefer not to have this conversation now. But, you know, it even comes down, it's not just politicians, not just elected officials, but even family members where there is some division.
Yeah, and first I want to say it was great to hear from Fairfield and Adams County, some of my old stomping grounds when I lived in Gettysburg. So thanks for your call and for listening. But I think a lot of us experienced that over the Thanksgiving, the Christmas holidays, where you have family members who are very passionate about certain issues. And it's nice for us because I have an out. You know, I just say, I don't talk about that. I don't express my views, even to family members. And they get all, what? What do you mean? You can't even tell us? And my wife says, nope. So Amy steps in, and so I listen and I sort of nod my head, but it's not something that I can get involved with. But yeah, I've heard those conversations, and I've heard diverse points of view that are on the far left and far right, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to fact check a couple of these. Like, no, that's not right. No, that's not, you know. So that's sort of the role I play. But that is a fascinating dynamic I think we've seen in the last couple of years.
Where I find it hard to help myself, though, is when I do hear those things that are not factual. Because when you point that out, then it can lead to more of the conversation. I guess I have to take your tact. And that's pretty much what I did. But at the same time, it's just like, okay, we're not going to talk about this right now.
Right,
right. Here, Garth says, he emails, I suggest that redistricting is a concern confined to a minority of progressive liberals who blame redistricting for the Republican majorities in Harrisburg and D.C. rather than examining the underlying policies which take progressive liberal policies issues out of the range of the majority of moderate voters. You've heard this from Republicans that, and a court ruled last week that it was not proven that politics was a big part of the redistricting process. But you've heard people say this, that you have progressive liberals who are just unhappy with the results.
And I think just to provide some context, I think that this happens whoever is drawing the map that particular year. This is a debate that's come up when the Democrats control the legislature.
In Maryland, the Democrats have a big majority, and they also have been accused of being one of the most gerrymandered states in the country.
Right. Now, I would just say that I think that this issue is gaining in attention simply because of, and I would agree that people were unhappy with how elections played out in whether their states or their communities or nationally. So it's gained a little bit more attention in the last few years. But, the issue of redistricting and gerrymandering has been front and center. It just hasn't received sort of the attention. But there have been people that have complained about the maps each and every year.
I have said this often and told the story often that years ago, even the last 3 or 4 years, our listeners on this program very often, when an issue, a problem would be identified, would bring gerrymandering up as the reason behind it. And often, you know, you talk about that, people's eyes would glaze over like, oh, okay, that's a little too inside baseball for me. But you're right. More and more people are talking about it.
And we'll have a second round of series of stories coming up at some point in the spring, probably late winter, early spring. But I think one of the things we highlighted with our collaboration with Penn Live and Keystone Crossroads was to take a look at these districts that include areas that are so different from each other, and the struggles, or I shouldn't say struggles, and the effects of having to deal with, maybe a county commissioner would have to deal with 4 different congressional members to try to get a grant or something like that. So I think it goes beyond just looking at the map and saying it's unfair to Democrats or Republicans. I think it also takes a look at issues that impact your community and how your community can function when it's two different distinct areas that are trying to accomplish different things.
Edward is in Camp Hill. Edward, you're on the air.
Good morning. I appreciate it. And I hesitated to call, but here I am. Having been around for seven decades, it's becoming more and more depressing, unfortunately, to view and hear the things that are going on in the world today. And I believe the problem with one of them that is going to solve all the other problems will be occurring in the next century. And I'd like to give you something to do on a calculator quickly. First, take 98.7, which I think most of us know is the temperature of the human body when it is standing still and doing nothing and not generating any heat, and multiply it by a number that has now been seen as the average or the approximate population of the world, which is 7 billion. And about the time you run out of zeros on your calculator, you may come to understand that that figure represents multiple times the temperature on the surface of the sun. And the source of the 7 billion is, of course, closer to the atmosphere than the sun is. So we should be able to understand the impact that the various distinguishes in the temperatures has on the atmosphere of the planet and thereby the climate. And we talk about addressing environmental problems, and I donate to many environmentalists and so forth, but unfortunately, as a physician will tell you, that you don't cure a disease by addressing the symptoms, you cure a disease by addressing the cause. And most of all the environmental problems we're addressing are symptoms of the cause, which is excess human population.
What do you do about that, though, Edward?
Well, this is a difficult problem, which is why perhaps nobody's addressed it. But the sad part is, it seems that nobody is recognizing it or even trying to think of something to do with it. There is one source here you might contact that is making an effort to address it, but unfortunately one that I don't think is going to be really meaningful. And that group is called Population Connection.
Okay, I'm going to write that down. Is that national or is that a local organization?
That is out of their headquarters is in D.C. I believe their editor is on the West Coast.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much for your call. Actually, Tim, I have heard people say, "Listen, overpopulation, the Earth, there are too many people," but I don't think people are going to take the Chinese, the policy of limiting the number of children. So you have to ask the question, what do you do about it?
Right.
But he's got a good point.
Yeah, I think that's a show that would definitely be worth taking a look at. I think there was an article sometime in the fall that came out in one of the online publications that was talking about, the people who aren't having children are saving the Earth. And there was a furor around that. But, raising that point, maybe that's worth exploring even more.
Tom in Carlisle says, can we have a good science-based discussion explaining the evidence of global climate change and how scientists interpreted this evidence to come up with their conclusions? Second topic, in the early part of my career, I worked in the oil and gas industry, primarily in exploration and exploitation. Hydraulic fracturing has been around since 1950. It's not new. I understand the processes and the science behind the geophysics involved. There are far too many assumptive myths about the dangers presented by hydraulic fracturing, granted that they are large in industrial processes, but if done properly, they are not as environmentally damaging as people assume. And we also have a science-based discussion on hydraulic fracturing. What is it and what it is not? We do that kind of often with, sometimes with State Impact Pennsylvania, but from time to time, maybe it's good to take a step back and say, okay, let's do fracking 101, or the basics of fracking, if you will, since that's the topic you brought up.
Yeah, and I think that is such a complicated issue that we've been covering it for 6 years through State Impact Pennsylvania, and we always have the discussion when people, say, hey, you didn't cover this, you didn't mention that. Like, not every story is going to be the be-all to end-all fracking stories. I think some of the stories that we've covered through State Impact Pennsylvania has shown a major impact on a community negatively, and some have shown that there's been positive impacts. And I think you're right, Scott. I think taking a step back and saying, like, here's where things stand right now. This is what we know. And these are some of the pros and cons that have come up.
Gary has a suggestion. It says, a show featuring independent pharmacy owners and pharmacists to help explain the impact poor regulation in years prior and the PPACA itself have had on current higher cost and restriction of services.
That's an interesting one. Yeah, I like that. I think that my godfather, my uncle, was an independent pharmacist back in the day, so I understand this one a little bit. But yeah, you're seeing, you know, who has a community pharmacist they go to? They go to Rite Aid or they go to CVS or one of the other national chains, Walgreens. So yeah, that's definitely an interesting one to take a look at.
Mike is in Lewisburg. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I want to follow up to the previous call where the caller believes that the redistricting and gerrymandering is only a progressive issue. Keep in mind that the most common name on all of our ballots across Pennsylvania, every election is the following: no candidate filed. So we all lose by not having good and many times any candidate who runs for positions because they believe there's no chance. So even in Republican primaries, no one is running because of gerrymandering. They believe there's no chance. So that's, we get what we deserve, and no candidates are filing because they believe the system's rigged with gerrymandering.
Hey, thank you very much for your call. And this is something that has been reported often, that one of the repercussions or alleged repercussions of gerrymandering.
Yeah, and I think that's been an issue, whether it's gerrymandering or not. I think it's been a matter of encouraging people to get into the political world right now that can be very difficult to be a part of, and you have a lot of attention on you, and every comment is scrutinized, and some people don't want to have to deal with that. But when you see that a primary has no candidate on the Republican against an incumbent, say, or a Democrat against an incumbent, and there's nobody running against them, and on the other side of the ticket, whether it's Democrat or Republican, they don't have a candidate either in those races. So all of a sudden, you have an incumbent who skates through a primary and skates through a general election. So you know, that is something that I think is starting to change. And I think we're going to see a lot more candidates in 2018.
Tim, we only have about a minute or so left, and I want to thank you for being on the program today, and especially the listeners today, with all your suggestions. And I'd encourage you to continue to send in your suggestions. I have to admit, I get 50 to 100 a day emails just suggesting programs. Don't get to all of them. Locally, if they're local, try to pay a little more attention to them, but continue to send those in. And, you know, we take a look at all of them and ask whether, okay, is this something that our audience wants to know, needs to know? A couple other issues real quick, Tim, before we leave today. Protection from abuse, ACL as opposed to electronic monitoring from protection from abuse, the Me Too sexual impropriety cases that will continue. Obviously, a lot of poverty issues, health care, so many other things.
We have medical marijuana and opioids as well.
Opioids especially. Tim, thank you very much for being with us today. Tomorrow's program, examining the impact of the new tax overhaul.
Smart Talk is produced by WITF as part of our mission to deliver relevant, high-quality programming. Support comes from Capital Blue Cross, which shares WITF's commitment to being a trusted resource in our communities. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by Pinnacle Health Spine Institute, part of UPMC Pinnacle, offering a complete range of services to diagnose and treat your spine condition. More information is available at upmcpinnacle.com/spine.